You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to RA Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 19th of March, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Of course, I am joined today by political commentator and activist, Alex Davies. Alex, how are you doing today?
Hello, everyone. Yeah, very good, very good. How are you?
Pretty good. I mean, we've just been watching Tommy Robinson's live stream, which we'll be discussing later on in the show. It's a shame that technical difficulties prevented people from actually hearing his speech. But I guess technical difficulties can affect us at the best of times, and even people with lots of money. I mean, I had so many problems when we started up Radio Aryan with getting the sound right. I probably still haven't got it right today, but people don't realize the amount of effort that goes into putting out these podcasts and creating content. And of course, we do rely on donations to keep the station going. I normally say it at the end of the podcast, but I'll say it at the beginning of this one. And we do have a Bitcoin wallet, and we do encourage people to send us Bitcoin. You can find that in the sidebar of the Radio Aryan site. But back to the topics for today. We've got four main topics: beard babies, Muslim rape gangs once again, and stabbings in London. And the first news story is unaccompanied beard baby was given a free home in Britain, yet still nail-bombed a train carriage. Foster parents of an Iraqi refugee last night demanded to know why he was left free to carry out a tube bombing. Ahmed Hassan, 18, entered Britain on the back of a lorry and admitted to Home Office officials that he was trained to kill by Islamic State, but blunders meant he was placed with the loving couple, who had no idea about his links to the terror group, as he secretly built a deadly bomb within their home with a YouTube recipe. His victims and MPs yesterday questioned why he was let into the UK and why counter-terrorism officials failed to monitor him adequately. I mean, this is just absolutely ridiculous. How can the MPs question why he was let into the UK when they bowed to pressure and said that anyone under the age of 18 can come into Britain? There was this Jew, this Lord something or other, I forget his name now, and he was the one that lobbied for this law to allow anybody to come into the country. So that's why he came into the country. And the fact that he was able to build a deadly nail bomb with a YouTube recipe, and yet we've got YouTube removing sites as soft as the Daily Mail are now getting removed from YouTube, along with the guy that was uploading our Radio Aryan podcast. He's had his channel removed. People are getting your channels removed all the time, and yet stuff is still up there where people can work out how to make their own nail bombs, which is what this lad did. It says that he's 18. I don't know if he is. He looks older than that. This was what happened last year, wasn't it? We had all these adult males that were coming into the country that we were told were children. And that's what has happened here. This is one of those unaccompanied minors that all the talking heads on television were wringing their hands and saying, we must allow these people in from Calais. These poor children have struggled to make their way across Europe to get into Britain to a safe place. And as soon as he's allowed in, he tells the government that he's been taught by Islamic State and he wants to kill people, and they hand him over to a loving home, a couple who have so much love to give that they open up their home to what they think is vetted children who need parents. And the government handed them this kebab who was intent on killing people. So I am not surprised that they are furious, and their altruism has been taken advantage of. And this scumbag who was given everything, has turned around and set off a nail bomb. But the people who are to blame for this are the MPs, the very people who are questioning why he was let into the UK. They are the ones to blame for this, because it is pretty obvious that if you allow in children whose parents and friends have been bombed by your country, they are going to have a bit of a grudge against you, aren't they? They're going to be inclined to try and get their own back, which is exactly what this sand nigger did, basically. What are your thoughts on it, Alex?
Well, it's the same thing every week, isn't it? You know, you
yeah.
Just one more story of one more guy who's been given everything, you know, on a plate. You know, he was given, what was it, a place at college, and he was given a foster home. You know, how many, you know, kids are there in deprived areas of this country who, you know, they've been born into, you know, maybe to drug addict parents or alcoholic parents, and you know, they've grown up with nothing really. You know, they struggle, and you know, because our social services, I'm not sure if people are aware, but our social services are a joke. The number of kids who fall through the net, who, you know, their parents don't look after them properly, they'll come into school dirty and soiled clothing, and they'll not have proper meals. I remember kids when I was in school, you know, they'd come in and they'd smell, and you know, at the time you kind of make fun of them, or you know, oh, that kid there smells, but really what was going on at home was they were probably being like neglected and left to their own devices, and you know, these kids, they get nothing, whereas this guy, and he's 18, he's not a kid, he's 18, is given everything on a plate. To be fair, the fact that he came over here and tried blowing people up, I don't blame him. You know, if you've come from Iraq, which has been turned into a hellhole by our government, then, you know, I don't particularly blame him. You know, before the invasion in 2003, Iraq was a relatively stable country, despite the fact that for, you know, since the first Gulf War, the Americans had placed all sorts of sanctions on the Iraqi government and were trying to destabilize the country as much as they could. So, you know, business as usual, really, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't blame the guy for feeling like that. Of course he's going to feel like that. What's absolutely ridiculous and is high treason is our government calling for them to be let into our country, and the left and all these leftist groups, Antifa groups that call for open borders, this is on their heads. They are the ones that cause this, because the rest of the country has common sense and knows that this is exactly the sort of thing that is going to happen if you allow these creatures into our country. Continuing with the article, prosecutors said it was his luck that his device did not fully explode. His target was Earl's Court Station, where he hoped to kill hundreds, but the train was delayed, and the bomb went off at Parsons Green, injuring 30. Dozens more were wounded as they fled. So I guess we were saved there by the privatisation of British Rail, which is never on time and charges far too much for train tickets. It's an absolute joke, our rail system is, since they privatised it. But because it was privatised, the train didn't arrive on time, and he wasn't able to kill hundreds. But he, as I say, still injured 30 and wounded a lot more. Yesterday it emerged that 20 months earlier, Prevent were tipped off about Hassan by Charity Barnardo's, a day after his first Home Office interview, when he revealed he had been trained to kill by Islamic State. That's Prevent that are very keen on getting hold of young nationalists who have never shown any inclination to any violence. They'll step in and grab hold of them, but they did nothing whatsoever about this Iraqi lad that said that he wanted to kill people. His college teacher made a second referral in August 2016 after he was seen making a donation to Islamic State. Prevent was called a month later once again when Hassan disappeared to Wales for a week. But it was unclear last night what, if any, help, that help should be in quotation marks, he received from the programme. In a pre-trial hearing, prosecutor Alison Morgan said foster carers Penny and Ron Jones were never told that he had been trained to kill by Islamic State. And normally, these foster parents would be told what problems the child had before they were handed him. So they're obviously trying to cover this up as well. They're obviously trying to put him across as this poor war orphan rather than telling the prospective parents about just what he had seen and what he'd been involved in. And the couple welcomed Hassan into their home in Sunbury-on-Thames, Surrey. That's a nice area, where he stole knives and screwdrivers to build his bomb while they slept. Mrs. Jones said, "It makes me really angry that anyone's life was put at risk. I feel very betrayed. The Home Office have let everybody down, and social services could have found out more information." Well, I think they did know more information, but it would have been racist to tell the parents. Chris Wildish, who was caught up in the blast, said this country did everything they could to help him, yet he still did this terrible thing. The case is to be looked at by the Home Affairs Committee. Tory MP Sir Christopher Chope, a committee member, said, "I think it is a legitimate question to ask, why did we let him in? Our liberal rules are being exploited by our own enemies." Well, that's like trying to close the door after the horse has bolted, isn't it? I mean, this isn't the first time that we've heard about these poor unaccompanied minors at Calais that have carried out these atrocities. It seems to happen all the time. And they were telling us that there's only a couple of hundred of them there. Well, there's far more than two or three of them have carried out these crimes or tried to carry them out. They had them in Germany. There was one of them in a train that tried to chop people up. There are others that have complained about the behaviour of supposed unaccompanied minors that have got beards and look like they're in their 30s that have been handed to these foster carers. And, you know, I would be suing the government if I was these foster carers, because it's quite clear that the authorities knew what he was, and yet they still handed him over to them. They handed over, it's like handing them a primed weapon. And they're just lucky that he didn't try to stab them to death. He just tried to stab strangers to death with a nail bomb. But I don't think this is going to be the last we hear of this, Alex. I mean, as you say, it's a regular occurrence. You got any more thoughts on it about these foster parents and what the response to it has been?
Well, the foster parents themselves, what are they? Just a bunch of liberal do-gooders, you know. They didn't have to take him in. Nobody's forcing them to take him in. They didn't sort of specify, oh, well, you know, we want a white British child, did they? You know, so what do they expect? You know, you play with fire.
I suspect they probably wouldn't be able to. I suspect they probably, they're not allowed to say, we only want white British children. They probably had this forced on, you know what I mean? This is
the same as with the... forced on. I mean, it's a case of, oh, now they've had their hand burnt. They think, oh, it might not be, oh, well, this is terrible, you know. But I think it's a case of, look, you know, to become a foster parent, you have to go through all of these hoops. You're not forced to take any child. If you don't want a child, you can say, look, no, we can't cope with him. There's nothing, you know, you're not obliged to take the child in. And what I would say is, at the end of the day, these parents probably had all of these naive ideas about how, oh, you know, we're just going to take this guy in. And, you know, they probably didn't care that he had a bit of a beard. They probably thought, oh, but he's from some, you know, underprivileged country and, oh, some war zone, so we'll take him in. And, you know, they had all of these naive ideas. And when they've actually been forced to face reality, that basically when you've got somebody who comes from one of these countries, they can have all sorts of problems. They're probably going to have post-traumatic stress disorder. They can have all sorts of undiagnosed mental health issues. And if their parents have been killed, they're probably going to be full of anger and hatred. When they actually realize that's going to have consequences and that those things are going to manifest themselves in some very nasty ways, then they've gone, oh, well, it's the social services' fault. Oh, it's all their fault. Oh, this is terrible. You know, well, no, you're adults. You should be able to understand these risks.
Yeah, it's like when people adopt from other races. You cannot adopt a child from another race and expect them to behave like a white child. They're not going to behave like a white child. They're going to have instincts that are completely different to a white child. And you know, I guess these parents here, these foster parents, they would have been trying to virtue signal and show how anti-racist they were and how they could take on a child that's non-white from, you know, from the middle of a war zone. Yeah. And all he needed was love and nurturing, and the environment would change him. And it just shows you the environment does nothing whatsoever. You can do as much as you like with the environment. And it's not going to change the actual genetics of the creature, is it?
I'm sure they loved the fact that they could go down the bridge club and show off their new accessory. You know, I'm sure they would love that. Yeah,
well, that's what I love, isn't it?
Really, you know, they'd go down the church every Sunday and they'd tell the vicar about how, you know, how brilliant they are, how much Christian charity they have for this foreigner. But, you know, like all of these sort of middle class whites, you know, where's the compassion and charity for, you know, their fellow white people who are underprivileged in this country? You know, I'm sure these people in from Sunbury on Thames probably don't think poverty exists in the UK. So, you know,
that's the thing, isn't it? Is there could have been a white child that they looked after who would have really appreciated all the help that they could have given him. And instead, there's still white children in the, you know, in the caring homes, in the adoption homes that are in the care system, which there are still white children in the care system that are being preyed on by the Muslim rape gangs. They could have taken a girl from within our own care system and prevented her from being preyed on anymore by these rape gangs. But instead, they chose to extend the hand of friendship to our racial competitors, and not just our racial competitors, but our racial enemies, people that have nothing but hatred for us, and who actually told the government that they had nothing but hatred for us. And that's the thing. That's where these people feel really let down, I guess, is because they just weren't told about it. But they should have had common sense and thought, well, shouldn't we be looking after our own family first? Charity begins at home.
They could have taken a refugee from Telford, couldn't they?
Yeah. Well, from South Africa. I mean, we've got refugees in South Africa. They've got refugee camps with white people in them. They're the sort of people we should be helping. And in Telford. We'll get on to more fallout from Telford in the next story. But just to finish this one off, as an asylum seeker who entered this country unlawfully, so he's an illegal immigrant, he's already broken the law, he was rewarded for that. He was provided with a home and an education beyond anything he would have received in war-torn Iraq. And that was just while his asylum claim was being considered. His asylum claim should never have been considered because he broke into the country. It's like breaking into somebody's house. And he was given everything from a studio flat and a place at college to a loving foster home, only to repay their generosity with murderous contempt. I mean, just look at that. They handed him a studio flat. And our own young lads at 18, they don't even get housing benefit. They can't even get a place of their own. They have to stay at home with their parents. And yet he was just handed a studio flat and a place at college. And this is before they've said, oh, well, you're entitled to anything. And this was when he'd actually broken into the country. So, you know, it's just like rewarding someone for burglary, really, isn't it?
Yeah. They don't give you housing benefit until the age of 21 nowadays, do they? And then if you're under the age of 25, if you're trying to seek job seekers allowance, they'll only give you 50 quid a week. And,
it's not enough, is it? Not even for a shared room.
Oh, well, try affording, you know, a studio flat on Universal Credit when you're under the age of 25. It's impossible.
It's I've followed what they've done with the benefits. I mean, it used to be you got enough to rent a place on your own, And now what they're saying is that I think even if you're under 25, they're not going to give you enough to rent a place on your own. I think you have to be in your 30s. So they're saying that everyone has to share, or they have to stay at home with their parents. And yet, if you come from outside of the country, a studio flat, that's a posh flat. That's not a bedsit. That's not staying in a hostel. That's having a nice, plush flat handed to you at 18 years old. It's disgusting. It's,
you know, you try and get one of those around here, and it's, you know, £400-£500 a month, you know, without mentioning the bills. So how, you know, most people who work can't afford, you know, can't really afford that. You know, if you're on a salary of, you know, £1,200 a month, well, after tax, you're left with what? Just over £1,000. So what, are you going to spend half of your money on rent, you know?
And this guy, was in Surrey.
In Surrey is going to be a lot more, isn't it? But, you know, just talking about around here, you know, what are you going to do? Spend all of your money on rent? Yeah, that's what our people have to do. Maybe we need to look into the blacking up and you know, turning out on the beaches of Dover one evening and see if we can get away with pretending to be asylum seekers.
That might be worth doing as a publicity stunt, but I guess that they were probably then trying to lock you up for being racist. You know,
you have to keep the thing going, I think. See how far you can get with it. Wait until they give you a flat, and then you can drop the act.
One of the stories that we were talking about a while back, you remember about the guys that were dressed up as the bobsleigh in the carnival. It was somewhere in Wales. Mm-hmm. Eventually, it was decided that they weren't actually racist. They did actually get let off, which is good. I think that happened a couple of weeks back, but that's not really relevant to what we're talking about now. Moving on to the next one, and that is to do with Telford that we were discussing last week. And also Morgoth from Morgoth Review, he did a 45-minute short hangout on the same subject, which I recommend people listen to, which was really good. But continuing on from what we were discussing last week, we've got one here, which is the Crown Prosecution Service tells police it is too much trouble to prosecute the Muslim rape gangs. Police officers investigating the Muslim rape gang scandal in Telford have revealed that court's orders against more than 20 suspects were discarded. The victims of the abuse were failed because the cases were allegedly too much trouble to prosecute. The horrified officers also believe that more convictions would have been made if the abuse cases in Telford were linked to each other at the time. The officers said police were overwhelmed by the scale of the abuse, and that in one case, a derelict building near Birmingham was filled with women that were abused by men brought in by minibuses. That should say, abused by brown men brought in by minibuses. They also said that they were frustrated that so few of the predators, predominantly from the town's Pakistani Muslim community, were jailed. The officer said, "At one point we had 70 cases and one victim had close to 100 offenders. Many officers were frustrated because the Crown Prosecution Service was treating the cases as separate when we knew that they were linked." The mother of an abused girl who died supported the officer's claims after she revealed that she had given police a 3-page list of suspects. She also claimed that nothing was done with her list. She said that her daughter and a 13-year-old were in a car driven by abusers that was allegedly stopped by police before then being allowed to continue. And this is, you know, on top of the police not wanting to investigate this because it's racist and people ignoring it because of that, what we've now got is the Crown Prosecution Service saying that it's too much trouble to actually prosecute these cases. And instead of seeing this as a group threat, as a group of people that are doing this, I mean, that's what a Muslim rape gang is. It's a group of them. They're going after them all individually, so they get less of a punishment. And also less of them actually get investigated in the first place. So they've actually thrown out cases because of this. And this is the police that are now whistleblowing about this. So it's not just the police, failings in the police. It's failings in the Crown Prosecution Service. And the Crown Prosecution Service has what they call reverse discrimination, affirmative action. So they have a certain percentage in the Crown Prosecution Service is made up of Muslims and non-whites, which is why they are so inclined to take on cases of hate crime against white people and will do all that they can to resist investigating cases like this. I mean, this is the reason why we say you have to look at this threat as it's a group threat. You cannot look at Muslims or any non-whites. You cannot look at them as individuals. You have to look at them as acting together in a group. And the Crown Prosecution Service is looking at them as individuals when it's quite clear that they're operating in a group. I mean, you've got minibuses that are taking them into a house that's filled with women. We know that they are passing these women and girls around their brothers, their uncles and their friends, and they're all working together as a gang, and yet the Crown Prosecution Service is ignoring that. And because they're ignoring it, people are being let off, and once again, the victims are being failed. Do you want to add anything to that, Alex, before I move on to the next quote?
Yeah, well, the CPS and the police, they're one and the same. They're part of the same system. Same with the MPs, you know, the MP for Telford, you know, this week came out and sort of said about how, you know, white working class girls are being victimised. Well, you've had a long time to come out and say this, but now it's been exposed. Now the story's out there. You're going to try and you know, use that as an opportunity to further your own career within the Labour Party. You know, all of these people, they will keep their heads down until their head's on the chopping block. And then they'll sort of, as you can see, the police now are sort of, they've come out and they've said, oh, actually the numbers, you know, it's not actually that many. And they've also come out here and said, oh, you know, we haven't actually not been doing our job. You know, it's not because of, it's not because it's too much work. Well, yeah, we know the police are lazy. We know the police don't do their job. We know that all of these things are ignored because they don't want the hassle. It's really as simple, straightforward as that.
Well, they're making excuses again, as you say there. I mean, in response, Assistant Chief Constable Martin Evans denied that court orders were stopped because they'd be too much work. However, one of the whistleblowers said that police had lots of people they suspected of abuse, but did not put them before the court. They said that the sexual risk orders, which would cause suspects to be tightly monitored, were considered too much work. The officer said, it would have been a lot of work, but what price do we put on protecting these kids? And that's something that we were saying last week. Do they have any value at all for white children in this country? You would think that every resource that they had would be put onto stopping this and protecting our children, but they're not. They're not doing it, and they're actually throwing these cases out. And we've actually got a police officer now saying, what price do we put on protecting these kids? And that there's money to send foreigners, there's money to send Iraqi terrorists and give them a studio flat and set them up at college, but we don't have the money to investigate when young white girls are raped and their families are killed. And don't forget, we've got a mother and daughter that was burned to death, a house that was burned down, and then that was used as blackmail and threats to threaten these other girls to go along with what the Muslims were saying. I mean, this is really horrific stuff that's gone on here. And they're just saying, oh, it's too much work to actually bring them before the court. That reminds me of there was a Tommy Robinson video with someone in the House of Lords the other week, and he said that the government don't want to investigate this because they're too frightened of what it means when they, if they were to find the truth out. They're too frightened of what they would have to do to put a stop to what Muslims are doing in this country. And that's what we've got here. It would be too much work to actually put them before the court because they would all be connected, I guess.
And it would mean that their whole multicultural, multiracial utopia, that idea that we can all get along together and it's all going to be happy days, is a complete falsehood. The idea that, you know, once you realize that these groups are at each other's throats and there's only one group that, you know, the fact that it isn't kicking off is because one group, the majority group that's the victim in all of this, is basically not responding. It's basically allowing itself to get eaten up, allowing itself to get butchered, and the rest and the other groups can take their slice of meat from us. That's what's going on here. And if we actually had an inquiry into this, and it was objective, it would come back with this idea that we can build a multiracial utopia is not going to happen. This idea that and they love to push this idea that, you know, the far right is dividing our communities. No, we have divided communities because of this multiracial experiment. Going back to the 2001 riots in Bradford and Burnley and Oldham, they had an inquiry into that, and the response that came back was that people, that society had now become a community of communities. What that means is that under one state, you've basically got people living completely parallel lives with different values, different cultures, different languages, different everything. It's like, you know, parts of our country have become like India or Pakistan. We're not joking. It's not just a bit of rhetoric. You go into somewhere like Blackburn, where the town is literally segregated 50-50, half white, half black, half Pakistani. It is literally the white part is like England and the Pakistani part is like Pakistan. You have sari shops and you have people speaking all of these different languages, and you have people selling halal meat. They you can't get in the Pakistani areas. You can't. You're not going to get normal food, and it's a completely parallel society. So that's, we're not living in this utopia. We're not living in a united community that's under threat from the far right. What we're living in is a society where we're already divided. We have one group of people who are growing, they are increasing in their confidence, and they are gradually taking over more and more parts of our country. And then we have our people who built this country, who are in retreat and are completely without cohesion. We are battered down at every opportunity, and the only time that we actually stand up for ourselves is never actually dealing directly with these issues, but only when it comes to dealing with proxy issues, because nobody wants to be called racist.
Yeah, that's what it boils down to. But diversity itself means division. So, we are already divided. That's what diversity is. And there was a study done a while back by the UN. It was a huge study looking at the effects of multiculturalism, and every one of the effects was negative. There was no sense of community cohesion. There was no sense of wanting to help the community. There was a sense of fear, which was there whether there was an increase in crime or not, mainly because you just don't understand what people are saying. So if you can't understand what somebody is saying, how can you communicate with them? If you're living somewhere where where more than one language is spoken, I mean, in London, you've got dozens of different languages being spoken, you're never going to be able to understand people. They're going to have different body language, and people just stay indoors. They are too frightened to go out, and the crime rate goes through the roof. That's what diversity has done. And anyone that speaks up about this, we're told that we're wrong for doing so. We are the ones that are causing the division. We're supposed to just shut up and put up with it. And just say, well, it's all our own fault for our white guilt for slavery or for the Crusades or whatever it is that they tell us. And it's all a pack of lies. We shouldn't be feeling guilty for anything. We've bent over backwards to help these people. And the way that they have responded to that is to just take as much as they possibly can from us. They just see us as being weak. We just see us as being booty there for the taking, free gifts that they can just take from our country. And we need to put a stop to it. We need to wake up. The white man needs to wake up and do something about this. More from this article. West Mercia's Assistant Chief Constable Martin Evans explained that the orders were not pursued because they didn't want the victims to face their abusers in court, among other reasons. I mean, that is hilarious. So you've now got the police saying that they have so much concern for the victims that they didn't want them to face their abusers in court. Whereas the victims are saying that they were made to feel like criminals by the police. And they've been absolutely traumatized by the way that the police treated them. And yet you've got this lying chief constable making excuses for not pursuing the people that abused them because they didn't want them to face the abusers in court. Well, make it so they don't have to face their abusers in court. That's the solution to that one. These people shouldn't have our laws applying to them anyway. They're our laws. They're not their laws. Their laws say they should have their hands chopped off and they should be whipped. It's no wonder they think they can get away with murder in this country when we don't have a death sentence like they do in theirs. These latest claims come after the mother of Becky Watson, 13, said she gave the police a list of more than 10 abusers months before her daughter died in a car accident. And was that an accident? But she says the police handed the list back to her, leaving her angry and frustrated. One staff member allegedly told her she's not being battered or anything like that. So they're saying it's not even a crime. Why is she bothered? That's what the mother was told. Becky Watts was among five people linked to the abusers who has died, including Lucy Lowe, who died in a house fire alongside her mother and her sister. So you've got five of these girls, these sex slaves, that have died in mysterious circumstances, that have been killed by these gangs. And you've got the police saying, well, we don't want to put the victims through any more, so we'll just let the abusers carry on doing what they're doing. I mean, that's what they're saying, isn't it? They are going to just allow the Muslims to continue what they're doing, and they're just going to make people that speak up about this, people like us, they're going to make us the enemy and tell the public that we are the ones that are dividing the country. Well, I don't think the public are going to put up with it for much longer. Is there anything else you'd like to say on that before we move on to Londonistan, Alex?
No, just that these things are going to keep happening. In Huddersfield at the moment, there's something like 30 men going through a similar trial, eight of whom are called Mohammed. So they're probably Polish or something, you know? but yeah, I mean, this is everywhere. It is absolutely everywhere. And it's only going to get worse as their population gets bigger. So, you know, white man, are you going to do something about it before it gets too late, or are you just going to sit there and be a bitch?
You know, Mark Cullett and the BNP were highlighting what was happening in Telford, and what was the response to that? Well, they're racist. Yeah, hate crime. Keithley,
yeah. Well, actually, it was all over the news. Nick Griffin was taken to court over it, and it was all in the public eye. People knew about it, but people are too ignorant to, get their head out of their arse.
They didn't believe them, did they? They didn't believe what the BNP was saying. And there's been no apology about that. There's been no calling up Mark Cullett or calling up Nick Griffin for their views on this now that they've been proved right. There's been none of that. They're still attacking the so-called far right when we are the ones that are bringing these facts to light and highlighting these crimes. And yet now you've got the newspapers saying, oh, isn't it terrible that this went on? But you've got no apology for accusing the BNP of lying and accusing them of being racist. You know, you've got groups like Britain First that are highlighting this, and they're still doing the same to them.
Well, at the time, the accusation wasn't that they were actually lying. It was actually that the truth was no defence and that they were inciting racial and religious hatred. That's why they were taken to court.
So it
shows how, in modern Britain, you know, if you tell the truth, it's no defence.
Well, it's saying it's illegal to criticise Islam. It's illegal to criticise Muslims. Even if what you were saying true, even if they are raping your daughters, raping your sisters, if you point that out, then that's inciting religious hatred. It really can't go on for much longer. It really can't. And the next article is linked to this as well. And this is just what's been going on in London. The number of sexual offences committed against children in Sadiq Khan's London has soared to 1,200 in the last year, new figures show. That's just in 1 year, remember. I mean, you've got 1,400 girls in Rotherham. That was over a few decades. And you've got this 1,000 in Telford, that was over a few decades. Where in London, you've got 1,200 in the last year, new figures show. Statistics show the number of child sexual exploitation cases in 2017 had risen by 30% on the previous year. But the Metropolitan Police claimed that it had seen no evidence that London was facing similar scandals to towns like Telford and Rotherham, where politically correct police and authorities failed to act as hundreds of girls were raped, beaten and trafficked, they saw no evidence of it, not with their city that is 60% non-white. They didn't see any evidence that non-whites were raping. I don't believe that. However, officers in London acknowledged that they were tackling child sexual exploitation linked to gangs and other issues, such as county lines drug dealing, according to The Standard, which recalled police identifying a grooming gang targeting girls as young as 13, operating around a McDonald's restaurant in Stratford last year. So they have got cases of Muslim rape gangs, but the police are saying, no, we haven't seen any of that. Indeed, Scotland Yard was worse at safeguarding children at risk of child sexual exploitation and rape than it was 12 months earlier, according to a report published in November. Described by sources at Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services as the most damning review in the watchdog's entire history, it revealed that Britain's biggest police force failed to properly handle 90% of the child protection cases. Challenged over the concerning report, Metropolitan Police Commissioner Cresta Dick, that's the first female Metropolitan Police Commissioner we've ever had, she claimed that the issue of grooming gangs was hundreds of years old and suggested the apparent increase in offences was a result of raised awareness. "I don't think this was a phenomenon invented in the last few years," she said. "It really wasn't. It has been a part of our society for probably centuries and centuries and centuries." Despite research showing that 84% of child sexual exploitation offenders are quote-unquote Asian, while the vast majority of victims are white, the commissioner also appeared to reject the notion of any cultural or racial aspect to grooming gangs. So there we've got the police commissioner just telling bold-faced lies so that she can't be accused of inciting racial tensions. They've got grooming gangs operating in London. They've got a massive increase in child sexual exploitation that coincides with a massive increase in non-white people in London, yet they don't see any connection. And she even says that it's been going on for centuries. We haven't had Muslims in the country for centuries. We've never had grooming gangs before. It's not something white people do. We don't kidnap girls and pass them around our uncles, our cousins, our friends. We don't put them in a house, lock them up in a house and bus people in from all around the country to have sex with them. We don't drug young girls and invite them into kebab shops and then bribe them and tell them that they're our girlfriends so that we can pass them around. None of this has ever gone on in Britain before, and yet this lying bitch claims that it's been going on for centuries and centuries and centuries. Now, this is why this dyke has been made into the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, is because she's quite happy to just tell lies about what's going on, rather than actually telling the truth and having some loyalty to the British people. And this is one evil bitch to say this. This is like saying, well, if those girls hadn't been raped by Muslims, they would have been raped by white people. Do you know what I mean? It's the same logic that's being shown there. I guess she thinks because there's always been rape, then she can justify saying that there's always been grooming gangs, but that's complete nonsense. Either it shows she doesn't know what she's talking about, or she is openly lying where she is trying to avoid being accused of hate crimes. What do you think, Alex?
Well, if you're going to go for the top job, you need to make sure you're sticking to the right line. You can't rock the boat and expect to get ahead in your career, can you? And that would be the worst thing in the world, wouldn't it? You know, it's what people always complain about, isn't it? You know, oh, well, you know, I can't say that. It might affect my job, you know. So, obviously, part of what she's talking about here is about sticking to the narrative that they want to push forward. That is, you know, as you say, if it wasn't, you know, if the Muslims weren't here, it would just be a bunch of white guys doing it.
That's her logic. You know, she's just saying, rape away as much as you like. Don't worry, we won't identify the fact that 84% of all the rapes that go on with children are carried out by non-whites. We won't point that fact out. We won't point out the fact that we didn't have grooming gangs before we had all these Muslims in our country. We'll just lie about it and say that it's gone on for centuries. You know, she's pretty much saying, well, it's gone on for centuries. There's nothing we can do about it. We'll just let it go on and we'll pretend that it's white people that are doing it as well. Will that keep you happy? I mean, that's what it is, isn't it? They just don't want the truth to come out because they know that there will be a civil war. And all they're doing is just kicking the civil war on down the road until it's going to get really, really violent and horrific. And it's going to be our descendants that have to battle it out. Instead of doing something about it now, instead of deporting these people, starting with the ones that are doing it, they're saying, oh, no, we can't. And it's going to be rivers of blood, exactly how Enoch Powell said it was going to be. That's how it's going to end if they don't do anything about it now. And they don't have the balls to do anything about it now. That interview with that Lord, Tommy Robinson and that Lord, I thought that was very revealing about the government's attitude. And you've got the same here. It's just bury our heads in the sand and pretend that it's not going on all around us. But that Krista Dick, she was the one that covered up for the shooting of John Charles Menezes as well. Remember the Brazilian electrician that got shot in the head? And she was the one that covered up for that. That's why she was promoted to being chief of police with the Metropolitan. She's only about 5 foot tall. You know, how can anyone police other people when they're only 5 foot tall and female? I don't know. She's got no gravitas to her whatsoever. She's just, as you know, to put it bluntly, she's just an ass licker.
She must be really intelligent. That must be it. Really intelligent.
She knows the right carpet to lick. I think that's what went on there. Moving on to the next one again, concentrating on London. Air ambulance called to more stabbings and shootings than road accidents in Sadiq Khan's London. London's air ambulance had to attend more stabbings and shootings than road traffic accidents for the first time in its almost 30-year history in 2017. Newly released figures reveal that airborne trauma specialists and paramedics treated some 560 shooting and stabbing victims over the course of the year, compared to 533 cyclists, drivers, passengers and pedestrians who had been involved in road traffic accidents. Dr. Gareth Greer, the Air Ambulance Service's lead clinician, said, "It is now not unusual for our teams to perform open chest surgery for stab wounds twice in a single day," adding, "This would have been unheard of a few years back." Dr. Greer's revelations concerning the air ambulance echo similar revelations by Dr. Martin Griffiths, a top vascular and trauma surgeon at the Royal London Hospital in Whitechapel, about the number of gunshot victims being treated in modern London. "Our numbers of victims of gun injury have doubled since 2012, he revealed. "Year on year, we have seen a 20 to 30% rise in the past 2 or 3 years. We will admit 50 to 60 patients this year with gunshot injuries." Gun crime increased by 16% from 2015 to 2016 and by an incredible 42% from 2016 to 2017, despite draconian restrictions on the right of law-abiding citizens to personal firearms in Britain. "This all forms part of a wider picture thrown into sharp relief by crime data released by Sadiq Khan's office recently, which showed homicides in London up by 27% and youth homicide up by an astonishing 70%. That's where all the young blacks are just killing one another, behaving exactly the same as they do in Africa. There's no reason for why they would behave any differently in Britain. But looking at these statistics, I went and had a look at what the statistics were before we had all this immigration. And stabbing itself was not even a separate offence until 1997. So up until then, you just had grievous wounding. And when you look at the figures for wounding, and this is for the whole of England and Wales, not just in London, but in the whole of England and Wales, in 1946, 498 people were seriously wounded. Just 498. And in 1996, when they brought in an act to make stabbing a separate offence, there were 12,169 cases of serious wounding throughout all of England and Wales, which is an increase of 2,400% in the 50 years since immigration to Britain started. There's a direct correlation between the foreigners coming into the country and the increase in crime. I mean, that is absolutely massive, to go from a peaceful country where in the whole of the country there was only 498 people seriously wounded, to go to 12,169 in 1996. And that was the last figures that I could actually find. And I bet, looking at it in 2018, it's probably around 30 to 40,000 people that get seriously wounded every year now. And absolutely shocking statistics. And yet we don't hear anything from Sadiq Khan about this. All we hear from Sadiq Khan is that we need to have a new hate crime team. And he's just made a new video saying how important it is to report people for hate crime, report people that are making these statistics known. I don't know what we can do about London, Alex. I don't know if we would take London back, whether all the whites should just get out of there and just leave it to be a cesspit where the black gangs and the brown gangs fight it out between themselves, or what we can do about it. But London, it is completely fallen. I mean, it's 60% non-white, and it's just a war zone, an absolute war zone. Britain used to be the envy of the world for how peaceful it was. You could walk about unmolested. You weren't going to get stabbed. According to Krista Dick, there was marauding Muslim rape gangs 3 centuries ago. But looking at the statistics, you know, England was the envy of everywhere else, because of the law and order and the peaceful country that we had. And you only have to go back to look at some of these old black and white movies to see what the country was like. You only have to go back to the 1960s to see what London was like. The difference when London was still majority white and there was no litter on the streets. And it's just horrific what's been done to our capital city. But these statistics, I think, do help to wake people up, because there's no other reason for it. It is all down to immigration. What do you think about these stabbing stats, yeah, Alex?
And you can just look at how our police officers dress now,
yeah,
to see how much more of a crime-riddled society we are. It used to be that, you know, what arms did a bobby on the beat used to carry? They used to carry a little truncheon, and that was it. Now they go out there, they've got stab vests, and they've got tasers, and the way that they dress is more like a paramilitary uniform now than something like they used to wear, which was a lot more kind of civilian and a lot more kind of a lot less intimidating. You know, they didn't used to wear all black. Now, you know, it's this all black uniform that's designed to sort of give this sort of martial impression. But you can look at these statistics and you can just go, you know, if you look at gun crime, for instance, as the years have gone on, our government have introduced harsher and harsher gun legislation. They've taken firearms out of the hands of ordinary people, and for what, you know, the correlate, you know, it hasn't caused a decrease in gun crime at all. Because what happens is, when you take the guns out of law-abiding citizens, the only people then who have the guns are the government and the criminals. The criminals aren't going to care whether or not you ban certain firearms or not. They're going to use them anyway. In fact, they're probably going to jump at the idea of having people's guns taken away, because then if they do turn up at a shop and they're doing a robbery, the shop owner isn't going to have a gun underneath the counter. So, and you can see that plays out in America as well. You compare America to Switzerland, they have very similar gun laws. In fact, Switzerland has a higher gun ownership rate per capita than America does, yet it has a far lower rate of gun crime. Why is that? Is that because Switzerland is a much more homogenous society, where it's a much more white society? maybe that's something to do with it rather than the actual prevalence of guns in the society at large.
That's a good point to make. I remember when the police first changed into RoboCops and the stab vests and all the rest of it, and I remember being shocked at it at the time and thinking, well, surely that is actually going to encourage people to behave violently. Are you expecting people to violently attack you, shoot you and stab you? Is that the way you expect people to behave? And I remember this was before I was a nationalist, and I was thinking, you know, that's not good. You know, that says that the government thinks that we're likely to stab and shoot police. But of course, in the inner city areas that are filled up with blacks, then yes, they are going to stab and shoot the police. But yeah. The way to deal with it isn't stab vests, it's get rid of the people that are doing that.
Get rid of the people causing the crime.
Yeah.
But London's become a completely deracinated city. You know, it's not, there's no one prevalent population there anymore. It's a patchwork of different tribal and ethnic groups. You know, you've got Kurdish areas, Somali areas, Bangladeshi, Pakistani, Turkish, Iraqi, Iranian, Algerian, all types of pretty much every you know, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, pretty much any kind of racial group or ethnic group on the planet that you can think of has a section of London that is theirs now. It's become a patchwork of the entire globe. And what that means is there's no community there anymore. There's no, the idea that you can have community policing, like what you would have in maybe a rural part of England, is completely alien. And the idea that you could have police officers walking around without being basically armoured up with all sorts of protective gear and without having access to tasers and truncheons would be impossible, because they would get that you'd have hospitalized copper every day.
We used to have the coppers on the push bikes, and they just used to wear a shirt, and they just had a little wooden truncheon, and they'd know everybody in the village. They'd give you a clip around the ear if you did the wrong thing. This is still within my lifetime. Things were like that.
Yeah. I can remember watching The Bill. And you know, the uniform in that was a white shirt and a tie.
Yeah, not a stab vest and all the weapons that they have now and shooting vests and bulletproof gear and riot helmets. I mean, what the riot cops used to wear is what the average beat copper now wears. That's the difference. Well, we got some positive news that we can round the podcast off with. We're actually recording this the day before you hear it. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, we were watching Tommy Robinson's speech at Speaker's Corner, and we weren't actually able to hear the speech. But we did see the turnout, and it did look like a good turnout to me. The guy that was actually recording it said that there was 14,000 people there, but I didn't see 14,000. I know you didn't, Alex. My guess would have been that in the actual area they were, there was probably about 2,000 or 3,000 people. But actually watching the live stream, there was over 20,000 that were watching the live stream. And that is a good turnout. And everybody there was supporting free speech. And this incident with Brittany Pettibone and Martin Selner and Lauren Southern, you know, this has really drawn attention to the way that people are no longer able to speak their minds in Britain. And, you know, it's done a good job of highlighting this. And Mark Cullett did a really good interview this week where he was saying that it was a good job that they were stopped from coming in, because it has stopped there being a riot there with the Antifa, and it's drawn attention to this issue. And with Tommy Robinson speaking there, that has drawn attention to this issue. And there are thousands of people aware of it that weren't before. I think this was, you know, I think that this is a good thing that Tommy Robinson has been highlighting here, Alex. What were your thoughts about it?
Yeah, it was successful, you know, from his perspective. He set up what he wanted to do. He wanted to read out Martin Selner's speech, and that's what he did. He I didn't catch the end of the event, but from the looks of it, it went off without many problems. I know there were a couple of Muslims there chanting Allah Akbar, but that's what you get in the middle of London these days. The police did, and you could see this on the live stream, the police moved in. And if you go to Speaker's Corner, it's a really condensed space. There's not a lot of room there for you to move because of where the fences are, and because of the volume of people there, you know, you've got to think there must have been about 1,000-2,000 people packed into a really small space, a tiny corner of Hyde Park. There was not a lot of room there at all to move, and yet the police insisted on trying to move in about 20-30 of them into the middle of this crowd. And that was just clearly a provocative move, because if trouble had broken out around where the speaker was, they wouldn't have been able to get there. They wouldn't have been able to see what was going on, for a start. If trouble had broken out anywhere else in the crowd, unless it was literally directly adjacent to the police officers themselves, they wouldn't have been able to get there in time. So there was absolutely no reason for them to do that. It was precisely to try and provoke a response from the crowd, but the crowd didn't allow themselves to become provoked. There were a couple of harsh words, I think, said to the police, you know, oh, you've got to do what Theresa May tells you, lads, don't you? You know, that sort of thing. But the crowd didn't respond with violence, which is what I think the organisers on the day wanted. They didn't want any trouble. So, yeah, it was a very successful event, and it showed, Tommy turned up with his security crew, his new security detail, who all looked like, you know, pretty handy boys. No doubt he's found some money somewhere down the back of the sofa to pay for them.
Down the back of the tanning salon.
Yeah. So, yeah, all, I mean, you know, as far as considering what his strategy is, which seems to be the sort of chase publicity and have these kind of try and have these sort of big profile events, that sort of go off without too much of a problem. It went according to his plan. So I can only see it being, good for them.
Well, I think that's the first time he's actually sort of headlined something that this is me speaking. And, you know, there's a lot of people that turned up for that. I'm wondering whether if the police all Zoom straight in there and around him, whether they were there trying to listen in to catch out whether he may have used some hate speech, and they had no interest in actually policing the rest of the event or looking out to see if there were any other crimes going on. The important thing was to listen to what he said to make sure he wasn't saying anything mean about Muslims. Maybe that was the point.
Maybe, but if they had gone in and tried to nab him, I couldn't.
That would have been interesting.
Very well, I think that would have triggered a very negative response from the crowd. But the main thing that I would point out here though is when people were talking and on the live stream, you couldn't hear the speaker. All you could hear was the reaction of the crowd. A lot of people were talking about things like, "Oh, we're going to take our country back. You know, we're taking our country back." Da da da, and I can't help but think that people didn't realise what they were there for. They were there for a free speech event. Now, I don't agree with freedom of speech. I don't agree in people's right to freedom of speech, because what that means is you're giving the right of degenerates and people who want to undermine and subvert your country the right to do that. And that's what we've done. We've done that in the past. And that has not worked out well for us, because our country has been subverted and the people who've taken it over haven't been as naive as we've been and have taken away our the right to freedom of speech. They've taken away the right of people who would oppose them to speak out about it, which is, in terms of strategy, a very clever thing to do. Now, whenever we try and fight back, people do it through issues like the European Union, so the Brexit vote. People talk about the Brexit vote as though it was a vote against immigration. In reality, the laws that are going to be changed aren't really going to affect immigration. The only portion of immigration it's going to affect is EU immigration, which is the only form of immigration that's even on a level acceptable. I'm not saying that EU immigration has been a good thing. It hasn't, but managed immigration from white countries could potentially work. It wouldn't trigger the amount of tension and problems that non-white immigration has caused. But the EU vote will not deal with non-white immigration at all. And in fact, as EU immigration will fall, I'm sure what we'll see is more and more people from non-white countries come into the country. So we'll have lots of Somali doctors with their 85 IQs coming in to do brain surgery. But that's the level that we fight these things on. We fight them on, you know, we fight on ideas of free speech and Brexit and these types of issues. But these are proxy issues. We're not fighting on the grounds of race. We're not fighting on the grounds of look at what's happening in Telford. I would say that it'd been a much more productive time spent to actually have gone to some of these towns where grooming gangs are active and actually try and do something about it, try and build up some sort of community resilience to these problems, rather than going to Hyde Park and talking about freedom of speech. It's all, you know, very noble to talk about freedoms and all this sort of thing, but honestly, I think it's too little too late. And really, I think we should know after, you know, a couple hundred years of liberalism, what the effects of caring too much about my freedoms and my liberties actually have on society.
Yeah, the problem with freedom of speech is that the majority of people just aren't well informed, and if they are the ones that are going to have the loudest voice. But at least if you have freedom of speech, then, you know, we are still able to have our voice, even if it is a small voice. It was a big voice at Speaker's Corner there because it drew so much attention to it. But that's what they are trying to take away from us now, is the ability to even speak up. So it's, you know, it's good that went on. And I see what you mean about it being a proxy. I noticed that as well. That's what people were saying. We're taking our country back. I mean, that's what is on everyone's minds. Nobody wants these Muslims here. Nobody wants these foreigners here. And any chance we get to protest, we will. And the British public will. And this shows that. And it's drawing attention to it. And I hope he has his new media venture is successful. He certainly looked like, it certainly looked very professional. The cameras that he had and the security that he had and the vehicle that he was in. I really do hope that, he does successfully take on the BBC and Sky and all the rest of our liberal media, which is what he's hoping to do. And, you know, he could well do it. He's already getting, you know, many people watching his YouTubes. There's many people watching YouTubes that end up watching soap operas on the television now. You know, this is where the fight is really being fought, I think, is through alternative media. And of course, we play our part in that, speaking to our audience, which is a lot more radical and racial than Tommy Robinson's audience. But hopefully we will reach some of those people in his audience. And I dare say there were a few there at that rally yesterday that were on our side and were racial. And hopefully they did speak to the more CivNat-minded people that were there and bring them round. I mean, that's what it's all about, waking people up to the real truths. And like we were saying last week, Tommy Robinson is like a gateway drug to that, which is why the government wants to ban Brittany Pettibone and ban Martin Selner, because they know full well that people move from them to us, and long may they continue to do so. Alex, thank you for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, with more RA Britannia for you. So until then, we hope you all have a great week ahead of you.
You were are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.